This interview was recorded for the Dersingham 2000 History Project on the 5th of September 1997. Please may I have your full name?
My full name is Winifred Nora Nurse.
Thank you. Do you have a nickname?
No.
Right. When did you first come to Dersingham?
I came to Dersingham on the 28th of September 1933, and I was 17.
Long time ago. And did you live where you live now? Is this always been?
No, I lived across the Manor Cottages, so the first cottages going in opposite the Institute.
Right.
With my parents.
Right. And had your parents lived here always?
No. We came, that was the first time we'd been, we came to live in Dersingham. We came from Hartley, but we came with Mr. Stanton, because my stepfather was groom gardener at the Stantons, and they left Hartley, and we came with them to Dersingham.
Right. Do any other members of your family live in Dersingham?
No, not now. My daughters, I've got two daughters, and they live a while. They live in different places. One at Stanton and one at Norwich.
Right. Now, what are your earliest memories of the village?
Well, my very earliest memory, I don't know whether you'd call it the village, was on the Saturday after we came here. The church bells were ringing and my mother said to me, I think there must be a wedding. And I went to the back gate and looked, and there was a wedding, and I stood there and I watched Mr. and Mrs. Wallace Twite come across from the church to the church hall for their reception. And that was the 30th of September, and Wallace and I, we've always remarked about it, and we've always, said when the anniversary came.
Right, so that's the earliest.
Yeah.
Any other ones?
Well, not really, because there was, growing up, I used to have to go and pick the milk up from the farm every morning before I started work in Lynn.
You had to pick the milk up?
In a jug?
Or?
Well, I used to take my stepfather used to take the milk can up and put it in the dairy. And then after the cows had been milked, the cowman used to put the milk in a milk can, it had a lid on, and that we used to fetch it before 8 o'clock, for breakfast, you see.
Right. Did they also have a round in the village, did they used to come round?
Yes, I think so, yes. I was just trying to think who came round. I know Lincoln's used to come round, but of course I had them after I come down here to live. But I can't remember whether there was any other, because we always had our milk from the farm.
Right, nice and fresh.
And going up there, I don't know whether anyone else has said or thought about it, but going up the church round to the farm, there were trees in the churchyard, and when I'm talking about big trees. I don't know whether they were elm trees, but there were quite a few. And eventually, I think they must have been elm, because they were taken down. So whether they eventually got elm disease or not, I don't know. But they were big, tall trees, and that were, proper trees.
Yes.
Up in the churchyard, up that wall, right the way up to the north gate.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, did you belong to any clubs or organisations? Now, you've shown me some photographs,
yeah.
So perhaps that will...
As I said, we came to live here in the September. In the October, I joined a church choir.
Right.
My brother had joined a week or two before me, and I joined somewhere about the end of October. And I stayed for 58 years.
Oh, in the choir?
Yeah, in the choir. Gosh. For 58 years. I've only just recently left after Reverend Jardine came.
Yes.
And I thought, well, I'd better see him in, because I had seven vicars, I'd say.
Yes.
And I thought, well, I'd see him in. And then my health began to deteriorate, and I couldn't keep up to go out in the evenings in the winter time for choir practice. And I thought, well, the best thing you'd better do is to pack up. So I said to my husband, one day, I'm going to finish with the choir. And he said, well, you must please yourself what you do. He still carried on, obviously. And so that's when I left. I did say to the vicar, I would have liked to have done the 60 years, but yes. I didn't think I could. I thought I'd...
And were you a soprano or a contralto?
Well, I was a soprano. I still am, actually. But the latter part of the time, Mr. Bell, who was the choir master, he asked me, would I sing alto? Well, I did. I learnt it. Unfortunately, I got a piano so I could sort of learn at home. But in the end, that did something to my voice box. I don't know what, I couldn't really do it. And I asked Dr. Shaw about it, and he said, no, I'll give you notice. He said, the voice box is like sort of violin strings or something. If you use it wrongly, it will gradually spoil itself, you see. Right. So I had a note from him and I went back to soprano.
Because this has happened to me, I've joined the choir and yes, they asked me specially to sing contralto and I've always been a soprano. Yeah. And I've found now that I can't get up to the high notes anymore. No.
But I couldn't get down the low notes. I can't, really? I can't now. You know, I had to stop and I was straining my voice, you know. And so I had to give this note to Mr. Bell. I said, I'm sorry, but I said, I can't, you know, I can't really do it. I couldn't really spoil myself, you know, make myself, my voice go to be singing that when I could sing all right soprano.
And of course, your husband was then in the choir as well.
Yes.
And what else? Was he a church warden?
Well, I met my husband in church. When I first met him, he was pumping the organ. He had been in the choir because he came to church. I'll tell you this, we've had a laugh. He did go to chapel. His mother was a Salvationist. And he used to go to chapel in the morning and they used to walk down to Snetcham to the Salvation Army in the afternoon and evening. And she always said, while they was in her charge, they would go where she went. When they got old enough to go please themselves, they could go where they wrote. So when my husband was 12 years old, he thought one day he would go to church to see what the church was like. And he went, and funnily enough, he chose the Sunday that they had a litany. And we always had a litany on the third Sunday. Every month we had a litany at that time. And he just said, oh, if they're going to keep doing all this kneeling, I'm not coming here anymore. But he said, I'll give it another try. Well, and of course he got, so that was ordinary morning service. And he stayed. And then the year after that, I think the Reverend Oliver came, I think, or the Reverend Oliver might have been there. But the year after that, they had the bells done, you know, rehung. Yes. And he started bell ringing at 12. And he was only so tiny when he was young. He had to stand on two boxes to reach the ropes.
Right.
But he stuck it and he was the bell ringer for over 60 years.
Right.
You see?
Yes.
And that's how I first met him. Of course, the ladies' robing room was up at the top behind the organ.
Yes.
And of course, we had about 60 members in the choir at that time of day.
Really?
Yes. Mind you, they didn't all come at once. Good job they did, because we shouldn't
have got them. Him in.
But Jack Burney used to be here, you know, he was a bell ringer. And he stood at the bottom there, or rather up at the top, through the bell tower. He looked through there one Easter Sunday, and I don't know how many, so I think he said he counted 48. And the first ones were going in the top store before the other ones were getting out the vestry door. You see, so that's just the war really did away with the choir as much as anything. But the changes in the choir has been all tremendous inside. Yes. I mean, we used to go to all the festivals at Norwich. Well, I went to two every 4 years they were. And they had one at St. Margaret's every year.
Where you sang with the...
Where they sang. There used to be about 1,000 voices at
How
Norwich.
Wonderful.
And the work we used to do, I'll tell you one because I know a lot of people know it, and that's Say Dr. Priest. You know, the Queen had it for her wedding.
Yes.
And we sang that. We learned that. The books are still in the cupboard in the...
Yes. And, of course, it needs a big choir to do justice.
Well,
you can't
have.
Do that with a little
and
choir.
And Mr. Roy, who was the organist at the time, he was very good. And he used to say when we was... Because Dr. Statham from Norwich Cathedral used to be the conductor for the things we had. And... He never went to a choir master's meeting that they used to have, and he used to come. We had to sing a lot of stuff unaccompanied, and he'd come with his, I can't think of the name of it now, tune book.
Yes.
And he'd come out there and he'd set that, and then he'd run round about, he said, I think I'm right. And I always remember him saying once, now that's how I want it, and I'm sure that is how Dr. Statham would want it. And he hadn't known whether Dr. Statham would or not. He was dead on. That is how Dr. Statham, when we used to go to rehearsal, that is how Dr. Statham would do it. He knew what he was doing. And not being derogatory about anybody else we've had, but we never had another organist, and of course he was organist as well as choir master, have never had anybody else like him.
Yes.
You know, not in my experience. I mean, even today, I can remember how he taught, and when I've been in the church, I've known exactly what he would want to do.
Yes.
You know, it stuck after he got it into it.
Now, some of the photographs show the WI at the time. Now, I believe you weren't actually in the WI, or were you?
I was going to tell you, I came to Dursingham in September. The October I joined the choir. The November I joined the WI with my mother.
Right.
I was 17.
And that was the Dursingham WI.
That's just the same one was I still belong to.
Right.
And I've been a member now, and... Well, Mrs. Bogus, she joined as well she joined in the January in 34, and a month or two, or a year or two, I should say now, her and I, the county, the was on the my sideboard, the county gave us a plaque for being 60 years in the WI.
Right, gosh.
So we were the only two who'd been 60 years in the WI at that time.
Are the things that the WI do now any different?
Oh, yes, that's not anything at all. Well, when I first joined, we had 128 members.
Right.
And then they started, Mrs. Willis started the evening WI, really, especially for the women who went to work.
Yes.
Well, then gradually they took a lot of our younger members from our WI down to the evening WI.
Yes.
And from then on, we keep getting new members, but then, of course, being elderly, we get some who die. So our membership now is somewhere around 40, I think, something like that.
And the kind of things, I mean, they seem to have quite a lot of outings and things now. Was it all flowers and jam making in the early days?
That is a thing that I don't know how the WI got to that. But of course, during the war they made
yes.
jam, pounds and pounds of it, and canned fruit and all that sort
and did
of thing.
They knitting?
Yeah. They still make jam, but no, that's not the same. We don't have. I mean, now we don't have the demonstrations like we used to, for the simple reason that WIs can't afford the demonstrators.
Right. And of course, people have machines to do everything these days.
Well, that's
don't
right.
They?
But I mean, I've learned a lot from the WI. I mean, I used to enter exhibitions, both Norwich and King's Lynn, when, you know, they had them. That's not so many years ago. Now I think I've missed the last two exhibitions in King's Lynn because I haven't felt that I could put my mind to it. But I mean, I've got bars up there and certificates and that I've... there's no what you call competition, but you got them out of, so they judged them out of 100
yes.
or whatever. And if you got 100 marks, say, you'd get a first class bar and all that sort of thing. And now they don't give anything like that. Now they just put stars on. I think the The cost is too much.
Yes, this is the problem. One of the things I noticed in your photographs was some of the what looked like great good fun concerts that you used to put on in the village, or that you used to belong to. Could you tell us something about that?
Well, that was during the war, and of course Mrs Reg Houchen, I'll say give her a name because there were several Houchens. Mrs Reg Houchen, she was quite good at putting things on like that, and she asked several people if they'd, I don't know whether anyone had asked her if she'd do anything, but she invited several people to a meeting to see whether they could do something for War Weapons Week in the first place, War Weapons Week. And so we went to a meeting, I was interested, and we had a meeting, and we got together, you know, and we had met and we had these rehearsals, and we put this on, and she called at the Dursingham Premiers, because that's the first, you know, that was the first concert party they had. And we really had fun, and we had good times. We had hard work, because we used to practice, and they really did. I mean, the girls, because I was older than the girls then. I mean, I was married, and I'd got a baby at the time. My husband used to stay to look after my daughter while I went out. And we used to go all around the different villages and do these concerts for war weapons. That was what it was for. The villages were, you know, raising
money. How did you get all the stuff?
Oh, well, which stuff?
All the costumes and things around the villages. Did you have a...
We made them.
No, but I mean, did you go in cars?
Oh, no, Mr. Houchen was a bus proprietor, you see.
Right.
So he had a bus. He only had the one bus when he first started. So we used to have his bus.
Right, because
you see, she was the organ. He went round, and he helped. He was great. He had great help. And his sister-in-law, Mrs. Evelyn Houchen, she was the pianist. She was a pianist. And yes, we used to go around in the bus to different places and take all, we used to carry cases. I've been coming down this road, of course it's not like it is now, because that was in your lane. I've been coming down here 1 o'clock in the morning coming home from a concert, you know, doing a concert party.
And there's also photographs of what I only knew when I first came to the village as the burnt out house. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Mr. and Mrs. Lloyd Pratt lived at the Oaks with their son. That was a big house. They had beautiful lawns at the back, went right to the fields. And they always had, we used to have fetes up there, lovely fetes we had there for different things, church fetes and village fetes, whatever was going on, they wanted to raise money for, he'd put on. He was very, a very generous man in that.
Because in that had way. They always lived there?
Well,
the
they
village?
Lived there. I don't know who lived there before, but they were there when I first came.
And they were obviously a wealthy family.
Yes, he was a big, horticultural. He was out Wisbech way somewhere. He had fruit farms and that sort of thing, you know. And I suppose he exported. I don't really too know much about his business, but no. Yes, they were moneyed people,
right?
But and they had the one. They had the one son. He was an adopted boy named Brian. He never was married, but he went out. He got interested in playing croquet as he got older. And he went out to South Africa somewhere, and he was murdered out in South Africa.
Oh.
After his mother and father had died, because Mr. Lloyd Pratt was a big church man. He was a church warden in church. And there's a plaque to him up near in the Lady Chapel on the wall. There's a plaque there to him, because he paid for the first microphones and things, you know, the system, the very first ones that we had there. And
can you remember when the house burnt, what effect it had on the village?
Well, no, I can't really. I think it must have been in the 60s, as you
yes,
imagine.
Yes,
I'm not quite
That's right,
sure.
When I first came.
I think that
yes.
was in the 60s. And oh, we didn't know anything about her. I mean, it happened in the night sometime, and it wasn't till the next day when my husband came home from work that he said, oh, the oaks has been burnt to the ground. And we didn't know anything about her. I don't know, somebody evidently saw it, because I mean, there was groom's house there. There was two cottages there. There was a groom's house where the pottery now is.
Yes.
And
and of course it was right next to where what we know of as the pottery, wasn't it?
Oh yes, that was the pottery. That was all their place.
That was all part of it.
That was all
right.
Part of it. Or where the doctor's surgery is, or two yes. Or that was all the oaks.
Right.
You see, all that going where the road goes up there. Well, that was the house. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
There was a wall went across there, and that was a house. There was a big double gate there, and there was some trees and all that. Right next door to the other house, I can't remember, where Cliff Richardson used to live. I don't know who lived there now. And they went right back to, I suppose where Pear Road and that is now. They went back right up there. And that was a beautifully cut. Oh, he had all sorts of things there, church fates. I remember we had a big Sunday school, I used to go, it was Sunday school teacher, me and my daughter, and we used to go to Sunday school teachers' meetings in Lean. And he had the Sunday schools, you know, that all come up there for a big fate.
So it was sadly missed,
yes,
wasn't it?
There was lots going on up there. Yes. You know, and then of course obviously when that got burnt down, that was it, but that was lovely.
Now, moving on, can you remember what was the worst time for you in the village?
For me, personally, do you mean?
The thing that struck you most, that apart from obviously family bereavement.
Yes. I just wonder what came first. Well, the war, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, my husband didn't have to go to the war. I mean, that was another funny thing. He had been, because he was working on a farm at those days, so Mr. Jackson, who he worked for, he kept getting him off, you know, of course he was working on a special thing. But my husband said to me, I don't think they'll have me, because they wouldn't have him in the territorials before the war, because he got what we always called a murmur, a heart murmur. Anyway, eventually he had to go to have a medical, and of course he put his name down to go in the Air Force, because his brother was in the Air Force anyway. So he had to go to Cambridge for his medical. I shall always remember the night he came home off the train. He came off the 9 o'clock train, and the first words he said to me when he got in the door, well, you've got an old crop for a husband. So I said, whatever do you mean? He said, well, he went all through the oral exams and all that, and he didn't have his medical till last. And he said, by the time I'd finished, I had about six doctors round me. He said, I thought I was going to die in the process, you know, while I was there. And he said, the head doctor, whoever the head doctor was, he said to me, now, get dressed quietly and be careful what you do. He said, well, I thought, what's the matter? Because he said, he was grade four. He said, you won't be able to go into the forces. So he said, well, what about the Home Guard? Because funnily enough, some soldier, chap had been coming round to find Home Guard, you know. And my husband had gone to Cambridge that morning, and I said to him, well, he's had to go to Cambridge for a medical, so we don't quite know what's happened. I said, whether he'll pass or not. And so this soldier said to me, oh, he'll pass, I'll pass a brass monkey, you know.
Yes,
but of course he didn't pass, and I still thought, I'll be quite honest, he worked Saturdays and Sundays on that farm, cattle feeding and pigs and all the rest on. He worked a jolly sight harder during the war than his brother ever did in the Air Force, because his brother was in the stores and he never went out of the country or did anything else.
Right.
And I used to say to him, well, why don't they let George go in and then put you in the stores? Because he really did want to try and help. But being the man he was, he settled himself and he said working Saturdays and Sundays was his war.
Yes,
But I'll tell you something else. He really got jeered about not being in the forces, but he never said a word. He let them get on with it.
Yes, well, not everybody could go.
Well, that's right. I still got his card upstairs. Yes.
So that would have had a big impact. Now, what would you like to see happen in the village in the future? Do you think we should stay?
Well, I don't know, because let's face it, I'm at the age now where I haven't got a lot of future, not to come. Let's face it, I'm 81, and I don't think I'm living now from day to day, and I don't know. I can't do a lot myself. I've had to give my work up what I've done. I've done a lot for the village in the past, but I've had to gradually give it up because I haven't been able to do it. I mean, I'm getting my body. I don't feel that old, but my body does feel that old, you see. And I mean, looking ahead, I would like to see the millennium in, I'll tell you that much, but whether I will, that's not in my hands.
And of course, we can't do a lot more anyway in the village, can we? Because it's more or less...
Well, that's right. I don't want to see any more building done. I don't know whether they will, but I don't want to see, because when I came here, there was nothing much. And my husband used to tell me that him and his brothers would lie in bed in the evening, and they knew every house in the village and who lived there. They used to make it a game. Well, by the time before he was ill, he didn't know many, because all the village people, what we call the village people, had gone. And I mean, when I try to think now, there's not many village people. You know what I mean, don't you? I mean, they are all village people, but the old village people that I knew when I first came to the village.
It's really more like a small town,
that
isn't
is.
It?
It's much, much bigger. You see, there was nothing down here. There was only this row of cottages here. That was fields across there, and that was all fields at the back there, all around there. And trustees had a little piece on here. And there was just this road, and of course there were all trees down there, and there was a garden over there where it belonged to where that bungalow is, which has now got the bungalows built on there. And of course behind there, there was Mr. Jackson's fields behind here. I don't know whether they belonged to him or whether he hired them, but down there, and there was a trustee's piece there, and they were farmed, you know, there was arable. Well, there was a meadows around there that got ploughed up during the war, and right down the bottom there was an old building there, what they used to call the hovel. I don't know why they called it the hovel, but that is on the old, very old maps.
Yes.
The church, you see, and then of course you use the pastures, and of course even now the pastures not like they were then.
No.
I mean, they're the same as the shape. There was no sports field on there.
Yes.
And there was no there was no path down by the hedge, you know, not to go down towards the lot. There was one across the middle, over the bridge, and there was one going to the church hall, you know, over there. And that was all. But it was nice pasture. I mean, my husband used to come and meet me before we were married. In the dark, in the winter, he'd come in, meet me near the church hall. And we'd come across, because his mother lived down this part of the valley, because she was born down here. They lived further down. And believe it or not, he knew every bump and hill in that pasture coming across that path. He did, really. And we'd come across in the pitch dark, because we'd got no street lights or nothing. And we had a torch, and there used to be cattle on there. And he knew where these blessed cattle were. I think he must have got cat sows or something. But he did, he knew, and he used to say to me, he'd get hold of my arm and he used to say to me, now walk straight, now there's a bump there or there's a dip there, but it's not like it now, because there's bumps and dips all over the place. And that didn't just, you could walk across there in the dark without getting your feet wet. I don't know what happened.
Well, I mean, you must, of all the people I'm going to interview and who have interviewed, you've probably got the longest memory of anything of the village. And I suppose your wish for the millennium, as you say, is to still be alive. So my final question is this: do you expect to be buried in Dursingham?
No.
You don't?
No, because my husband is cremated, and he always said, I don't mind anybody who's listening who know, you might know him. He always said, if he'd been asked, I don't mind what they do with my body when I'm gone, because I shan't be in it. But yes. You know, he was a Christian. I used to say to him, you're a bigger Christian than I am. And he was, because his church was his life in a way, a lot of it. He didn't push it to anybody, that was his. But for instance, he was a big football man. He played football for 16 seasons. He played cricket. And at the end of the time, he played bowls. When the football club used to have photographs taken, usually on a Sunday morning, he wouldn't go because church came for his photograph.
Yes.
That's what I mean. And he wouldn't give up church for anything unless we were on holiday, you know. He always went to church.
So you're saying he didn't mind where his body was?
No, he didn't mind where his body was.
And do you feel the same?
Yeah, well, yes, because I said to my doctor, because I've left his ashes up at the crematorium. His name is in the remembrance book. I had a Thanksgiving service for him in church.
Yes.
After he, you know, the following week, because I knew the people who wanted to be there wouldn't get in the crematorium anyway.
No.
And my daughter said, well, we're going to, you know, we'll have Dad cremated. I said, I'm definitely going to have him cremated, and I've got to leave him up there because I've got nobody to look after graves. I've got two graves in the churchyard myself, my parents and my brother, and I can't look after them.
No.
And he didn't mind what, because he wouldn't be in it, he said. So I said to my daughter, well, what's going to happen? Am I going to be up here with Dad? Because we know where he is, obviously. And she said, yes, this is where you'll come. She said, when anything happened to you, so that's where I'll go. I shall be cremated. What they'll do about service, I don't know. I have already made arrangements and paid for my funeral.
Right.
For their sake, really, because, I mean, they don't live in the village. And my daughter said to me some time ago, Mum, have you thought about having a prepaid funeral? He said, does Mr. Lincoln do one? I said, well, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. And she said, would you ask him? Would you mind? I said, no, I don't mind. So I did. And, of course, Mr. Lincoln do. So we got through. So I have done that. And they know. And what I like about it, they plant a tree somewhere for me.
Oh, right.
They plant a tree somewhere. I don't know where it is, but they plant a tree. And anyway, so that is all done. But what they'll do, whether they'll have a service in church or not, I don't know. I should imagine perhaps they will. I don't know. That is entirely left to them what they
do. But of course, you've been here a long time, and I think the villagers would appreciate it.
And so I've said, because I had to write down a bit on this form what I had to fill in. And they know what hymns I've won, not the other thing. My daughters know. I've left a bit there what hymns I would like, if possible. And they can do what they like with my body. Do you know what
right.
I mean?
Because you won't be there. You'll hopefully be up a lot.
I should be with the rest of my family up there. There's only me now. I mean, I've got cousins and that about the country, but nobody. Oh, I've got a cousin in Lynn. We are in touch, but then she's as nearly as old as what I am.
Over.
You see, so I haven't really got. No. I haven't got my brother. I lost my brother when he was 31. And So, I mean, I'm on my own, excepting for my daughters, but one is at Norwich and one's at Stanford, yes. So you know what I mean.
Yes.
I've got nobody in the village.
Right.
And after my cousin died over there, well, of course, Emily's wife died, so I am on my own in the village.
Yes. But you sound as if you've had a happy life in the village.
I have. Yes, I have. And I certainly had a happy married life. I mean, we were married 54 years before my husband died, and I really have had a happy marriage, and I'm not just saying this, we have, and I have told other people, and I'll tell you, and I mean, that's gone on record, we had a storybook marriage. Now, truthfully, we did, and I'm not just saying that. Anybody who, well, I mean, people who know me, because I'm not very good, people who know Alec might not realise that, you see, they might not know, but we did. We never had it, and people are not going to believe this either, but we never had a row the whole 54 years. We didn't, honestly, that's the truth.
Yes.
We never had a row. Oh, he wouldn't row for a start.
No.
I might have done, because I can go out, but he wouldn't, so we never did have a row. And mind you, we had differences of opinion, and when I said that, that's more like debatable. I mean, he might sort of think one thing and I'd think another, but we never had a row over it. You know, I mean, not even an argument, really. We used to discuss sort of things. But no, we never had a round-up one. I could honestly sit here and say that.
Well, that's a very, very nice way to end our discussion. Yeah. Thank you very much.
That's all right. You're welcome.